All right, welcome to another episode.
Number three
this time of Deep Thinking, the podcast where Ed Sorbo, former AMA pro racer, and Michael Gugis, a moto journalist, talk about whatever the hell pops into their head when it comes to the sport of motorcycle road racing.
I object to the title formal applied to me in any frame or fashion.
Former.
Or yeah. Formal, for
or
that
formal.
Matter.
Formal, yes, exactly. Formally, you're former until you grit up again. And then
I gritted up this past weekend.
Yes, you did. You know, and you rode a TZ250,
a GP bike.
Yeah. You know, I know it wasn't a great weekend for everybody involved, but that was pretty cool. It was kind of nice to see you on
the
TZ.
Well, the cool one was watching 75-year-old Tony Serra out there again.
Tony, I aspire to be him when I grow up.
And understand that the only way you can measure yourself against him is to record his current lap times, and when you're 75,
right.
You can use any bike you want. Compare your lap times to his lap times,
yeah,
but not
exactly.
Till you're 75.
Exactly. Most of us at that point, we're lucky to hang on to the remote, you know? God, that guy is so freaking cool.
We got to get him on the show one time.
Oh, yeah.
He's shy, though. I don't know if he'd do it.
Oh, you know what? He told me this week when we were in the garage, he said, you know, when I first started hanging around here, I didn't feel like I fit in. But listening to you guys bullshit and the kind of crazy crap that you guys do, I feel like I fit right in now. And I'm like, you know what? Old man, you go sit over there for a while.
Tony's from Jersey. He can fit in anywhere he wants. Doesn't even need a TV show about it.
Oh, God.
So what's today's topic?
Today's, what do we got to, oh, AMA Pro Racing, Moto America, has finally listened to my years of pleading. Now, who knows if they've actually heard me or not. But I've been saying for years, right?
Not just to Moto America,
but anybody who would listen. The mailman won't talk to me. The dog goes running the other direction. I keep saying that we need more. We need to have a 1,000cc super stock class back. It's part of a broader concern that I have. Anyway, Moto America, AMA Pro Racing, is for next year bringing back the 1,000cc super stock class.
Michael is part of the more is better mafia. He wants to see more bikes on the grid, more classes, more shit going on.
Not necessarily more bikes on the grid, but definitely more classes and more racing. I believe that too much is a good place to start from. Okay? I think it's important, and I think it starts us down the path of building a solid base for the future of motorcycle road racing in the United States, which I think took a wrong turn several years ago with this emphasis on the television show and the television package. So that's what I want to talk about today, is specifically the 1000 Superstock class, which has been really cool in the past. And in general, you know, racing then and now, how it's changed. Now, let's talk about me first.
Always a good starter when you're talking to a male of the human species.
When I first started going to AMA races, you know, I loved the super stock classes. I liked the fact that there was extra racing. I like the fact that there were different manufacturers.
So, for context, what year was this?
Oh, 1992 was the first one I ever
okay.
went to.
Back in 92?
Yeah. Back in 1992.
It was actually very cold here at that time.
Yes, right? Catherine is back.
As in ice age.
No food. Yes, well, you know. No, we're good. Thank you. take care. What was I going to say? Look, I took me and my pet woolly mammoth out to mid-Ohio.
Okay, so what we want to talk about is how it's changed from the good old days
to
what we're in now, which we can call the doldrums.
Right, is it the good old days? But I think having a super stock class has did a number of things for me. Number one, more racing. Number two, different manufacturers, different teams, different liveries, different
types
of
bikes. So the original concept of super sport racing back then, we
super
had
stock. Yeah,
super stock. You had a healthy superbike class,
right?
And you were looking for a less expensive way to do something similar.
Mm-hmm.
And then remember the context: this is national level racing,
mm-hmm.
so you're trying to help the manufacturers sell motorcycles.
Right.
And they were all making 1,000cc bikes,
right?
Which were all kind of a little wiggly, woggly, scary, heavy bikes that weren't significantly better than the 600 or 750 version.
This was actually, you know, there were 750 super stock. It was 750 super stock and 750 super bike back when I first started going.
But the key being that the manufacturers were all making these bikes and they wanted to have a place to show them off.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Okay. Right? So there was manufacturer support, which you got to remember is the foundation of pro national level racing.
Absolutely.
It's not club racing. The model that you're thinking of in your head from your six club races you've been to does not apply here.
Right.
Okay. And so we had the bikes were available, we had support in the form of contingency,
right.
We had various levels of support from the factory, either helping out a guy who was a team of his own with Suzuki support or Yamaha support,
right.
Or whatever. And this all moved up and down on the scale at various times. And now we don't have that.
Yeah.
Now we've narrowed down to less and less classes.
Right.
And then we're starting to see the pendulum go the other way. Moto America is looking at bringing this back because still the manufacturers sell these bikes.
Right.
But in a large way, it's a big cost difference between Superbike and Supersport.
Right.
If you can be on the grid with the same Superbike guys and maybe make some TV coverage and whatever, right? If you're Johnny Rock Page, it's going to cost you a lot less to go Superstock 1000 racing.
Right.
On the grid with the Superbikes. Than it's going to cost to be Superbike.
Yeah. A lot of those guys back in the day would take their super stock bike, which you were required to run DOT tires on. You throw slicks on the thing. If you could get within 110%, which you were good to
you
do.
Used to have the bikes. The classes were running at separate times, and you could try to use the same bike in two classes.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of examples of that kind of stuff going back to world level racing.
Yeah.
But those don't apply anymore. And we're all running slicks,
right?
So there's a big change from then to now, and we're going to talk about, what the differences are.
You know, let me tell you a little something too.
Do tell.
I will. Racing is it's a narrative. It's an opera. It's like imagine if you could watch Macbeth or Hamlet every night and never quite sure how it's going to end.
I can't understand the English they use. It'd be like watching British Superbike.
After you watch a few seasons of British Superbike,
I do like how they name their corners, though. It's
yes,
better
is,
than numbers.
That is kind of cool. But it's all about a narrative. There's a good guy. There's a bad guy. There's a team that's struggling. There's a team that's dominant. All of that plays into the enjoyment of watching a race. I can pull up. There's a new development series that Honda is running in Asia called the Asia Dream Cup series, okay? You watch the races. The racing is spectacular. I don't know any of the kids. There's no factory-to-factory competition, so it's One of the cool things that Superstock did was some of the guys who were competing in Superbike who could never win there had a chance to shine. You got to see them on a podium, It made for a much richer spectating event. It made for a much, much better
Moto
weekend.
Moto America has already decided to do what you suggested.
Thank God you've won
the argument.
Thank God. Somebody's
listening. You can
stop
beating the dead horse.
No. That horse needs an ass kicking. So anyway, I'm happy to see that there. You've been in the paddock. You've spent 5 years, six seasons racing at the pro level at AMA. What is the difference that you've seen when you've gone recently and been in the paddock versus what you saw a dozen years ago?
I recently saw a thread on the WIRA board that was titled, What's Wrong with American Road Racing and Don't Tell Me It's the Economy.
Okay.
What has changed is the economy. And the solution is economic. And what we can't get back is the past. When you go back to the house you grew up and you see the massive tree in the front yard that you used to climb in and you see it's a bush, you're always disappointed. When I started racing in 83, I paid $35 to enter a four-hour endurance race, which, by the way, my team won, my very first race ever. Won our class. We didn't win overall. That right there shows the economic change in
right.
such a graphic way. And tires lasted for a whole season. And when my shop in Hawaii, Sport Bike Hawaii, which still exists, Mike Kaufman is the owner, we used to get all of the crashed Hurricanes that we could from junkyards on the West Coast and sell them all day long for $2,000.
Okay.
And people would do a little bit of work, spend another couple hundred bucks, and take those bikes to the track and race the wheels off of them.
Got it.
And you can't do that now. You can't even come close to doing that now. And it's not just the fact that a modern sport bike is $10,000-something, but if you did it in present dollars versus those dollars, it's even a bigger gap. And then we didn't need tire warmers, and we didn't need stands.
Right.
We had a freaking milk crate, you know.
Okay.
So, and your transporter to get to the track.
Right.
Right? It used to be that the factory teams went AMA Superbike racing in a van. Rob Muzzy and Eddie Lawson driving.
Van.
A van, not even a box van.
Right.
Right?
Right. The guy, the box man was factory.
Yeah. So, and I'm not saying that we should go back to those days.
Right.
The tracks were dangerous. We didn't have runoff room. The leather sucked. You know, way more people got killed than are getting killed now. You know, we have way more people involved. If you count, we're more involved in going to the track because you count track days.
Right.
We didn't have track days back then.
Right.
Part of the reason that everybody raced was if you wanted to go to a racetrack, You had to race.
Right.
Some of those guys didn't belong on the racetrack.
Okay.
So it's changed in economic ways, not just in the amount of money we can earn, in the cost of gas, the cost of the motorcycles, the cost of the equipment, the expectation that we have. I don't want to go to the racetrack without my motorhome anymore because I've gone in my motorhome and it's freaking nice. It's a hell of a lot nicer than sleeping in the back of my pickup truck.
Yeah.
Right?
Although I gotta admit, the van works pretty well. The okay, that makes sense. You know that we can't go back to the way that it used to be.
Right. So we're not going to have the numbers of people, and that's the single biggest difference.
Okay.
When
you say number of people, you mean people in the paddock,
okay, not just participants racing and friends willing to come along and help.
Right.
But spectators who can afford to go there. Right. If you used to live 100 miles from a famous racetrack, Mid-Ohio, Road America, any of the places that would draw a big crowd.
Okay.
It cost you X amount of dollars to go there.
Right.
Now, to be a spectator and go to that event at the same place, and it did cost you what? 10 times more.
No, it's not that much more. I don't think the cost of being a spectator actually
has gone
up. The
cost of gas has gone up. The cost of hotel rooms have gone up. The cost of time off from work has gone up. The cost of your comfort level at the racetrack has gone up.
Yeah,
it costs more.
Yeah, but
you can watch a significantly better TV show for almost nothing at home in comfort.
Yes, that's true.
And if you're at the racetrack, you can only see the part in front of you at turn 5.
Every time I go to Laguna, I get the turn 4 grandstand seats because there's a jumbotron.
So you can look at pictures of Laguna back in the day or any other track, and it's a massive crowd of people.
Right.
And now, it's basically the same show. It's a bunch of guys zooming around in a circle, going really fat, right? But the number of people is dwindled to a fraction of what it used to be. So there's more
people,
spectators. There's more than, you know, just the obvious going on. It's not just that the racing isn't as good or whatever.
Yeah, that's
it's
always
that
a
people
silly
just
argument.
Don't want to go as much as they used to because they have all these other options.
That's a big part of it.
So
that
my
is a big part of it.
Strong point is that the model that we had for running our races was based on a time when you couldn't beat the spectators back with a stick.
Right.
No matter what you did right, you had a lot of people.
Right.
So you thought, well, what I'm doing right, it works.
Right.
We're still trying to force that model into a square hole today. And this applies from the club level all the way up.
Okay.
What we need, and maybe Moto America is doing this, I hope they are. We need a realistic understanding of where we are in the world.
Okay, what do you mean?
And we need to build a program for that.
What do you mean where we are in the world?
What drives people to come to races for real?
What drives people to participate?
What drives them? Why do guys race for real?
Got it.
Right? And the answer, unfortunately, is different for every single spectator and racer and crew member and official who wants to work for the series.
See, and this is the genius of me, Michael Gugis, and my idea. The genius of my idea and my thoughts on this is that if people go racing for a bunch of different reasons, give them a bunch of different opportunities to race.
Exactly.
There's a group of people out there who are only going to want to ride big twins because they love Ducatis.
Yep.
Why? Give us a heavyweight twins
class.
I'll
tell you the reason that we lost the big twins class in the AMA.
Which was?
At the time, the factories had a disproportionate say.
Right.
And they didn't like looking around in the pits, seeing some fucktard in slippers with his shit hanging out, making the whole series look bad. And in the paddock.
You put those guys in the back of the paddock.
And they worked to get those guys completely gone. Because right. sometimes, even though you had them hidden in the back, mm-hmm. sometimes they're on the frickin' grid looking like morons. And, you know, there's reasonable argument to
yeah,
that
oh,
stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
You know? And there's nothing
I was at a race at Road America where the sidecar fucks had a cardboard box in front of their pit with a penciled on sign that said, please donate to our racing. This is supposed to be a pro weekend.
No.
You know, it just makes us all look bad. Anyway, so this pendulum started to swing in the direction of less classes.
Yeah.
And it started with some good reasons. Fucktards looking like ass.
And,
but the result is it went too far.
Well, I think their big motivation was that, and we've talked about this before, the whole TV thing. Everybody thought that they were going to make a package for
yeah,
TV and sell
that's
that.
Crazy.
And make, yeah, and they just, unfortunately, right around that time, what's that thing they called? The internet. And now I am literally watching 14-year-olds road race in Thailand.
Yep.
All but live. And it's a ball. There's nothing
well,
wrong.
Well, that's a perfect example, right?
Yeah.
If you're going to succeed in the professional televised, we use the term televised to cover
video.
All forms of media showing
right.
your product to a greater audience. Because
right.
a number of people who come to this racetrack is not a big enough audience for the guys who are writing the big checks for the big team.
Right.
So there has to be a way to get it out there. You need to be multimedia suave. You
yes.
need to get your show out to everybody who wants to watch it how they want to watch it. And
yes.
if you have a fantasy that it's going to be like watching Wild World of Sports when you were a kid, you're behind the
you're
times.
So behind the curve.
My way of thinking, it's relatively easy to come up with a program that has a spectacular show. We have that now.
Yeah.
Josh Hayes and the boys going at it in Superbike. Roger and Josh at the last round last year.
That was awesome.
That's right?
Yeah.
The shootout at Fontana last year.
That was a
ball. Oh, my gosh.
Right?
Right? So we've got a great show. We just got to get it out to more people.
Well, I think the show... Okay. We have a great show. You mentioned a couple of races. Okay? Now, one of my difficulties as a spectator, in addition to being a participant, was always... I hated World Superbike 2013, Laguna Seca, in September, 5 races all weekend long, and one of them was a Harley race, and I don't count that. And I'm not even gonna apologize for
yeah,
that. Okay.
I think all of our listeners will agree with you that more is better.
But there's a reason for that. When we talk about a spectacular event, you need to have reasons for people to show up. It's easy enough to say, oh, I'll just watch a superbike race on TV. But it's different to go, you know what?
Yeah.
I'm going to go to the track and I'm going to immerse myself in 2 days of racing.
So you want to sell a experience.
Yes, to
okay?
the spectator.
And so back to when the factories had too much say in the AMA,
mm-hmm.
you know, starting in the time zone of, with say, 1998 was the middle of it.
Okay.
And they were getting rid of Pro Thunder, and a little while later they got rid of 250 GP.
Right.
Right? The people in charge had the idea that it would be better to have a few premier events, and the rest of the time people could walk around and check things out in the pits. And they were seeing what they wanted to see.
Right.
What really happens at all types of racing is that people go, I want to see these two races.
Right.
And the rest of the time, that's when they walk around in the pits.
Right.
When their buddy Fred is on the track, they're out there cheering for Fred. Then they go see Fred in the pits, and then they go around to their stuff. Right? You don't have to make... It's like an air show.
Yeah.
Some people are watching the air show, and everybody else is looking
right.
at the airplanes on the parked in the
but
paddock.
But if you've only
right?
got those two races going
then it's,
on,
yeah.
it's, it doesn't
if
work.
If there's two airplanes parked on the ground and one flying, nobody comes.
Exactly.
So we're in agreement, and this is why we think that the Pro-Am model...
Yes.
is so powerful
oh, yeah.
even at the world level. So, but let's talk about how to adapt the current model of racing
okay.
for the club level guys, the real world. Moto America is not going to call us up and say, hey, Ed, how should we run our series?
At Moto America, we would be open to such such an idea. Just give us a buzz.
le-suspension.com.
You're right, you know.
anyway.
We're almost out of time for this particular
episode.
We are. Yeah. So
we'll save the solutions to another episode.
But it is important to think about it, because solving the club racing issue, getting people to go club racing, helps fix the problems at the professional level.
2 minute warning.
Yeah.
What do you think about double points weekends?
Spawn of Satan.
Work of the devil, he says.
Who came up with that awful idea? I mean, you know what? And I know why.
It makes it more wrong.
It's just evil. It's just evil.
Okay.
You know?
And thank you for listening, folks. Same bat channel, same time in the future.
Ed Aloha. Sorbo and Michael Gugis.